Sfarno Parshios Tazria Mitzora. These two Parshios, as we know, largely speak about the halachos of Tzaras. So I wanted to share a number of very, very important lines in the Sfarno where he deals with the concept of Tzaras. So Tzaras is introduced at the beginning of Perek Yud Gimel with the words, Adam Kieva Or Besaro Se'eso Sapachos Obaheres. When a person finds in his skin one of these skin ailments, Se'eso Sapachos Obaheres. So writes the Sfarno on that, Kulam Minei Tzaras. All of these things that are mentioned in the Pasuk are types of Tzaras. Umar Ehen Lovon. They all have a white quality to them. And the Mishnayos in the beginning of Nagoyim go through different types of white, you know, the different shades of white, how deep the white color is. But the bottom line is that the typical examples of Tzaras are all white discolorations on the person's skin. Kamo Shebo B'Kabbalah, as we have a tradition from Chazal. Ve'ein bohem imine ha-tzaras shesipru harofim. Among the types of Tzaras which are mentioned in the Chumash, we don't find any of the other types of Tzaras which are described by doctors. In other words, there is a disease called Tzaras which is out there. Again, Tzaras is very often translated as leprosy. Rav Shamshon of Frohl Hirsch in his commentary on the Chumash argues that there's no way to translate Tzaras as leprosy. He talks about the qualities of leprosy versus the qualities of Tzaras as described in the Chumash, and he comes to the conclusion that they're two absolutely different things. Tzaras and leprosy have absolutely nothing to do with one another. But be that as it may, certainly says the Sfarno, there are other types of Tzaras which are described by the doctors. Remember, the Sfarno himself was a doctor, so he knew of what he spoke. And he said of the different types of Tzaras that the doctors speak of, the only types that would be considered to be Tzaras according to the Torah are Zulasi Hamorpia, Vaha Albam, Vaha Nesek. There are three types of Tzaras which are common to both the medical descriptions of Tzaras and the Torah's description of Tzaras. Omnam Sha'ar Mineat Tzaras HaChazokim Shesipru. However, when the doctors talk about other types of Tzaras, specifically Tzaras Chazokim, there are types of Tzaras which are strong types of Tzaras. Shehem Sarton L'chol HaGuf B'chlal. The word Sartan in modern day Hebrew is cancer. So I'm not sure if he means it in exactly that sense, but you know, these are terrible diseases. The doctors define Tzaras as a terrible disease that afflicts the body in its entirety. Vehem Notim El Ha'odem V'Hashachrus. Interesting, says the Sfarno, if you were to ask a doctor, what's the sign of most types of Tzaras that we encounter, particularly the ones that are very, very strong, generally the doctors will tell you that the discolorations associated with Tzaras tend to be reddish or blackish. Not what the Torah describes. The Torah describes how a person becomes Tomei through Tzaras when the discoloration on his skin is a white color. The doctors say that the extreme types of Tzaras tend to be red or black in their color. And ironically, those lo titameim ha-Torah klal, those types of Tzaras, the ones the doctors describe as being reddish or blackish, which according to the doctors are the stronger, worse types of Tzaras from a medical perspective, those types of Tzaras we don't find that the Torah considers to be impure at all. Right? So it's a little bit counterintuitive from a medical perspective. But as the Sfarno is going to lay out in just a few moments, the laws of Tzaras as laid out in the Torah are not primarily, or maybe even at all, halachas that relate to the medical aspects of Tzaras. They relate to the spiritual aspects of Tzaras. Ki eila hadalad maros levadona shesipru chazal. The four principal types of Tzaras, Shehem Se'es V'Toladato, Baharis V'Toladato, as Chazal referred to it, Se'es and its derivative, Baharis and its derivative, again, four different types of white discoloration. Ba'os V'Tochachos Al-Ovon. The reason that those discolorations appear on the body is because the person has sinned. Ka'amram Chazal, as Chazal say, Kol sheyesh bo echad midalad maris halalu einon ela mizbach kapara. If a person experiences one of these four types of tzaras, it's a mizbeach kapara, it's an altar of atonement for the sins that the person has committed. Avo sha'ar mineat tzaras shesipru harofim. But the other types of tzaras described by the doctors, the blackish and the reddish types of tzaras, lo yiyu be'ameinu klal atzad mizbach kapara. We don't find them in our nation at all, serving as a mizbeach kapara, as a form of atonement. Im lo yihye ameinu betachlis hakilkul chas v'sholom, kishor madve mitzrayim horoim. The only time that we find ourselves being stricken with those extreme types of tzaras, the blackish, the reddish, and the like, is where we've tumbled to the lowest level of evil. Tachlis hakilko, we've become unraveled and degenerate in the worst type of way. Kishor madve mitzrayim horoim, just like the other types of terrible maladies that were inflicted upon the Egyptians, where the Tochacha says that, if you, the Jewish people, don't do what's right, I'm going to afflict you, says Hashem, with the maladies I sent against Egypt, Madvei Mitzrayim Horoim, O Mitzad Cheip HaHagas HaMacho VaHamishta VeZulosam. Or, if a person commits a Cheit, a sin, when it comes to eating and drinking and the like. In this context, when the Sfarno uses the word Cheit, he doesn't mean it in a spiritual sense. In this particular context, he means it in a medical sense. Meaning, it's possible, says Dr. Sfarno, it's possible for a person to bring upon himself these other types of tzaras, the reddish, the blackish, if he's not careful about his diet. You know, if he eats or drinks in a certain way, which is a chet. Again, he doesn't mean chet in this context in a sinful way. He just means in a way where you're not as careful as you should be in terms of what you eat and what you drink, that could lead to the body deteriorating and having these types of tzaras. But the types of tzaras which are meant to be a spiritual wake-up call are davka, these white discolorations on the skin. So that's an introduction from the Sfarno. Again, that we should be aware that there are types of tzaras which are not even mentioned in the Chumash, and those types of tzaras, from a medical perspective, may be very, very intense and may cause the person to need a doctor very, very badly. But those types of tzaras are not part of the spiritual life of the person, and those types of tzaras are not impactful in terms of the halacha. There's no halachic implication when a person has one of these reddish or blackish types of tzaras, other than the fact that he has a mitzvah to take care of himself. You know, the same way that any time that he has something wrong with himself medically, he should go and seek out the doctor. For that reason, it's not surprising that the person who is commissioned by the Torah to deal with the occurrence of tzaras is a kohen. You know, if it was a medical issue, we would have a doctor looking at it. The Torah values the opinion and the input of doctors. But since these particular types of tzaras, the whitish discolorations, are a unique sign that something is wrong spiritually as opposed to being something being wrong medically, the Kohen is the one who's called in to deal with the situation. So the Sfarno, when he talks about the role of the Kohen, adds what I think is a somewhat unique twist to the role that the Kohen plays, as we'll see in just a few moments. So later on in Perek Yud Gimel, Pasuk Hey, the Torah describes how when the person has one of these discolorations that appears to be tzaras, it's not officially labeled as tzaras until he's brought to the Kohen, and the Kohen looks at him. The Pasuk says, V'ra'o ha-Kohen, and comments the Sfarno, Gzeros ha-Kosuf, Shelo tihiye tumas negoyim v'taroson ela al-pi Kohen. Right, as we know, we just mentioned a moment ago, The declaring of the tzaras to be tameh or tahor is all done based on a kohen, right? In other words, you could have the biggest Talmud Chacham in the world. Forget about the fact that we don't use a doctor over here. It's not a medical issue. But as Chazal themselves point out, you could have the biggest Talmud Chacham in the world. He knows the halachas of Tzaras backwards and forwards. He can identify a Nega Tameh, a Nega Tahar. He can identify which one is which. But he's not qualified to paskin on the Shaila as to whether a particular discoloration is Tzaras or not. He can help out the Kohen. He can instruct the Kohen what to say. But ultimately, it's the Kohen's say-so that renders the discoloration to either be tzaras or to be considered not to be tzaras. So why is it? Why is it up to the Kohen as opposed to most other areas of halacha where, if you determine whether a pot is kosher or treif, it's not a shaila for a Kohen, it's a shaila for a Talmud Chacham. So why bring the Kohen over here? Ki sifsei Kohen yishmeru das. As the Pasuk says in Malachi, the lips of the Kohen preserve knowledge, and what does that mean? V'yoru l'menuga l'fashpesh b'masaf. Number one, the Kohen has the role of telling the person stricken with tzaras to examine his deeds and to do tshuva. The Kohen may not be the best one who's equipped with the knowledge to determine whether this is tzaras or is not tzaras. He may not be the world's biggest Rosh Yeshiva, this Kohen. But part of the role of the Kohen is that he is supposed to be, so to speak, a Mashkiach. Not just a Mashkiach in terms of food, right? But he's supposed to be a Mashkiach, someone who can give a Musar Shmuz to the person who's afflicted with Tzaras. Now that you see that you're afflicted with Tzaras, now you have to do Tshuva. And that role is considered to be the role of the Kohen. The Kohen is the one who's supposed to give the Musar to the person afflicted with Tzaras and tell him, look, this is obviously a sign from HaKadosh Baruch Hu that you have to do tshuva, look inward, and decide how you could be better. So that's number one. The Kohen has this role of being the mashkiach, to tell the person what to do and change his ways. V'yispalil al atzmo, when the person stricken with tzaras hears that indeed he's afflicted with tzaras, the appropriate response on the part of the person who's stricken is that he should daven on himself. Very interesting. What's he davening for? The Kohen told him, you're stricken with tzaras, you have to do tshuva. So you'd expect the next line in the Sfarno would be, so now the guy who's stricken, the menuga, should do tshuva. The Sfarno doesn't focus on tshuva. The Sfarno focuses on tefillah. So what's where's tefillah coming over here? You already declared the person, the Kohen already declared the person to be a mitzora, stricken with tzaras, and he has to do tshuva, so he should do tshuva. What are we talking about tefillah? So I think what's implicit in the Sfarno is that the first step in doing tshuva is tefillah. In other words, this person who's a mitzora obviously is finding it hard to do the right thing, so he has to daven that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should give him the wherewithal to do tshuva, right? In other words, tshuva, it's not so simple to do tshuva by yourself. You have to daven to be able to do tshuva. The truth is, we do that every day. We just did that short while ago by Mincha. We're going to do that in a short while by Ma'ariv. Hashivenu avinu l'sar asecha, v'karvenu ma'akenu l'avod asecha, baruch atah harotze b'shuva. We turn to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and we say, please, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, help us do tshuva. So that's the Sfarno is telling us that an important step, maybe the first step in tshuva is tefillah. But then beyond that, v'yispalil gam ha-kohen olav. In addition to the Kohen being, quote-unquote, the bad guy, who yells at him and says, you know, you're a sinner, that's why you found yourself in this situation, the role of the Kohen is that he should daven for this individual. So what's the Kohen davening for? Kohen's davening, he should get better? Again, it's not a medical issue, it's a spiritual issue. It sounds like the Kohen is davening that the person should do tshuva. So this is a very interesting point, because, again, we'll come back to something we've quoted in the past. It's not immediately obvious that I can daven for you to do tshuva. You can daven for you to do tshuva. You're in control of yourself. But how can I daven for you to do tshuva? Hakol bidei shamayim chutz miyira shamayim, the Gemara says. Everything is in the hands of heaven, except fear of heaven. Meaning, whether you do tshuva or not is not really up to the Ribbono Shel Olam, it's up to you. It's up to you. HaKadosh Baruch Hu can't force you to do tshuva. So especially, how can I daven to Hashem that you should do tshuva? So the Masha in the first parak of Brachos raises this question. And the Masha says, it's true, I can't force someone to do tshuva. And I can't even really daven that HaKadosh Baruch Hu force somebody to do tshuva. But I can daven that HaKadosh Baruch Hu make it easier for the person to do tshuva. I can daven that HaKadosh Baruch Hu put the person into a situation that makes it easier to do tshuva. You know, in other words, the guy's walking home, you know, walking home one night, this Metzora, and it starts raining. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu can make it start raining right outside a shul where a shir is going on. You know, so the guy says, oh, got to get in from the rain. I'll go into the shul. He goes into the shul. He hears the shir. The shir changes his life. The shir talks about how he has to do this and do that and do the other thing. And he says, wow, you know, I'm so inspired. I'm going to go home and change my life around. So, you know, obviously he made the decision himself, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave him a little bit of a nudge, a little bit of a push, you know, to make sure that he would have the optimum setup to be able to do tshuva. So that's the role of the Kohen as well. The role of the Kohen is to give mussar to this person. The role of the Kohen is also to daven for the person. It's kind of, you know, as the Gemara says in a different context, small docha v'yamin mekareves. With the left hand, the Kohen is pushing the person away, in a sense. You know, he's using tough love. You'd better shape up. But with his right hand, the Kohen is grabbing the person, trying to bring him back in. In other words, the Kohen is davening that the person should ultimately do tshuva. Right? So that role of the Kohen as a mispalel, as someone whose role it is to daven for the spiritual well-being of the people that he's analyzing, you know, in the context of Nagoyim, is an important thing. This idea that tefillah, and particularly tefillah of the Kohen, in addition to the tefillah of the person who is potentially stricken, is a very important component over here. The relationship between the Kohen and the Metzora is brought out a little bit later on in Parshas Metzora, where the Parsha talks about the concept of nige batim, this very unusual idea that not only can a person be stricken with tzara'as, but a house can also be stricken with tzara'as. You know, whatever that means exactly. You know, there's some kind of discoloration that's on the walls of the home. So in that context, we read in Perek Yudalid that when a person sees something in his house that appears to be a nega, appears to be a discoloration of tzara'as, so he goes to the Kohen. And then the Pasuk says, V'tzivo ha-Kohen, the Kohen gives the word, Pasuk Lamed Vav, Ufinu es habayis b'terem yovo ha-Kohen liros es ha-nega. They should clear all of the furniture out of the house before the Kohen comes and takes a look at the nega, takes a look at the discoloration. Why? It's a practical thing. If the Kohen comes and he declares the house to be tameh, so that might potentially render impure all of the kelim, all of the furniture which is in the house. We don't want that to happen. So, you know, quick, before the Kohen comes, clear everything out of the house so that, you know, it minimizes whatever damage is going to take place. On a certain level, this halacha strikes one as being a little bit disingenuous. I don't understand. If the Ribbono Shel Olam sent a plague of tzara'as against the walls of this person's house, and it's supposed to impact on the house, okay, so probably it's supposed to impact on the furniture also. You know, it seems like a loophole. You know, you're looking for some kind of loophole in the tax laws, you know, to be able to find some kind of exemption. Okay, we'll enable the house to be declared tameh, but we'll save the furniture in some. We'll write them off as a tax deduction. It seems like a little sneaky on some level. So the Svarno over there writes the following. V'lo yavo kodem lochein. Right? The Kohen shouldn't come until they move the furniture out of the house.
Uben kach yihye zman tshuva utfila labaylim.
By taking the time to move the furniture out of the house, which again, presumably is a difficult process. I know anyone who's tried to move furniture around, even just from one apartment to another, you know, in the same couple of blocks, knows that it's a difficult procedure. So, you know, the amount of time it's going to take to move all the furniture out of the house is going to take a little bit of time. And that will afford the owner of the house some time to engage in tshuva and to engage in tefillah.
Uzman tefillah lakoing.
And at the same time, it's going to be a time of tefillah for the kohen as well. In other words, let the kohen daven. If it takes them 2-3 days to move all of the furniture out of the house, or even if it takes them 2-3 hours to move all of the furniture out of the house, let the kohen daven during that period of time for the mitzora, and let the kohen daven for that period of time for the bailim, for the owner of the house. And let the owner of the house daven and do tshuva himself. He saw something in the walls that might be an affliction of tzaras. There's still time. He can still daven that the kohen's going to come and take a look at it. It's not going to be a negat tzaras. He can still daven that it's going to disappear. It's going to turn out to be innocuous. Let him use this time while they're moving out the furniture to not just get his physical affairs in order, but let him get his spiritual affairs in order. Let him do the kind of tshuva and tefillah that maybe can prevent this whole situation from happening. So, I mean, the way the Sfarno understands it, it's not a shtick. It's not that he's trying to, you know, somehow get around the halacha. The halacha is set up in such a way to give him some time when he has that initial shock to be able to process and maybe do something that can change things, that the tshuva and the tefillah that he's going to engage in perhaps are going to be effective. So that's an interesting position on the role of the kohen, the importance, the centrality of tefillah and tshuva in this whole discussion. I want to just turn back to Parshas Tazria, and we'll start taking a look at a longer piece in the Sfarno, a very relatively long piece, which goes from Perek Yud Gimel Posig Mem Zayin pretty much to the end of Parshas Tazria, in which the Sfarno begins to give us a little bit of an overview about the idea of Tzaras as a whole. So we mentioned just in the past couple of moments that about two different types of Tzaras. There's Nige Odom, the person himself who's stricken with these discolorations of Tzaras. There's Nige Batim, there's the house which is afflicted with tzaras, and as the Torah describes at the end of Parshas Tazria, there are also nige begodim. A certain type of garment can be afflicted with this discoloration of tzaras. And again, the Torah talks about the end of Parshas Tazria, all the halachos that deal with that. So he writes, Mimash ein safik bo shlo yiyeh zeh b'teva b'shum ponim. When I was talking about tzaras that afflicted the body, says the Sfarno, we spoke about, you know, there's certain types of tzaras which are medical issues, you know, the red and the black types of tzaras. There's certain types of tzaras which are clearly just spiritual issues, the white types of tzaras. But in other words, at least tzaras on the body, there's some kind of commonality between the spiritual tzaras and the medical tzaras. There is no explanation for these discolorations that could afflict the garment, the nige begodim, from a natural point of view. Ki bebeged lo yikru elo hamaros hamashunos, im lo mitzad melocha tesimim bo bitzvoim shonim. The kind of strange colors which would appear on a garment to indicate that it's tzaras would never happen naturally. The only time these colors would ever come about is where somebody artificially added some kind of dye or paint to the garment to make it change colors. Ukvar ba'a hakabala shelo yodunu b'nige begadim zulasi halevanim bilti tzvuim klal. You should know that Chazal tell us that these halachas of nige begadim, of tzaras, of afflicting garments, only applies to white garments, not to colored garments. Again, something which just speaks to the supernatural nature of this halacha of negoim. You know, from a natural perspective, you know, if it's some kind of natural phenomena, why should the color of the garment matter? Okay, it matters because this is all supernatural. Amnam heir akosu shlif amim yezek kepele babagodim uvavotim. The Torah tells us that sometimes there will be this miraculous, supernatural occurrence of tzaras in a garment or in a house. The existence of these types of tzaras is to wake up the owners of the house or of the garment to tell them about the averus that they have. Fine. V'chein kiblu chazal she'ein bigdei goyim etame ben goyim. Chazal also tell us that these types of negoim, these types of discolorations, are only significant when they appear on a garment belonging to a Jew. If a non-Jew has a garment and it, you know, suddenly develops signs of tzaras, it's not considered to be a problem. It's not significant, right? It's a very interesting thing. The very same appearance is problematic potentially in a Jewish garment, but not in a non-Jewish garment. Why is that? V'zeki omnom haminho enoshi hu ataklis amachuvin b'metzius. The Svara takes a moment to talk about the greatness of man. He says we have to understand that the human race is the pinnacle of creation. Only human beings have the ability to be like HaKadosh Baruch Hu from an intelligence point of view, from what they're able to understand, and from what kinds of actions they're able to carry out. Man was created in the image of God. Hanikro Selam Elokim, Uvachocho Habachiri Hanikro Dumus Elokim. The Svarna over here goes back to something he spoke about in Parashas Bereishis. What does it mean that man is created B'tzalmenu Kidmusenu in Hashem's image and in Hashem's form? Right? What's the difference between a Tselem and a Dumus? So says the Svarna, Tselem means that man is blessed with an intelligence, which although it obviously doesn't rival the intelligence of God, at least it's an intelligence that far outstrips the intelligence of any other creation that God made in this world. We have a unique type of intelligence. And in terms of the demus that we have, the form that we have, that means, says the Svarna, that we have bechira chofshis, that we have free will. So in other words, in both of those regards, we're a little bit like the Ribbono Shel Olam. You know, again, we have intelligence that's not on par with Hashem's, but at least, you know, it could be compared in some way to HaKadosh Baruch Hu's intelligence. And we have Bechira Chofshis, which, again, is similar to HaKadosh Baruch Hu insofar as HaKadosh Baruch Hu also can do whatever he wants. Ki Ha'adam Levado Banivraim Hu Baal Bechira. Only man is possessed of this free will among all of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's creations.
Question, Rob. Let's say in a case, I would say I have tzaras, and then I don't want to necessarily disclose that, since it's, wouldn't that be considered, telling Cohen, wouldn't that be considered a lashon hara if you're disclosing a secret?
No, it's not for the person. I mean, it's a very good question insofar as if the person never goes to the Kohen, so he'll never be diagnosed with tzaras, and theoretically he never will become a mitzora. But it's not a problem of lashon hara for him to go to the Kohen, because again, this is what the Torah wants him to do. The Torah wants him to submit to the Kohen and to get that psak from the Kohen. Okay, we'll pick up tomorrow night. Bez Hashem, I'm not going to be here, so we will not pick up with this tomorrow night, but Bez Hashem will pick up with this on Tuesday night, so we'll see everybody then.